time. Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Morgan and I am an alcoholic.
Hey Morgan.
Hello.
Doesn't matter.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs, so out the door to the left, up the small flight. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are discussing step 4, part 1, which is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Please welcome our panel, Amy and David. All right, I will read the first paragraph on page 64, and then the panel will share a little bit each. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. And I didn't see which one of y'all wanted to go first.
Are you? I am.
You said you were.
I am. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy.
Hi.
I'll go.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. My sobriety date is May 9th, 1994. This, Simple Actions, is my home group. I have a service position in my home group. I have a sponsor that I talk to on a daily basis, and I have women that I sponsor as well. We're skipping the part of this that's kind of step 3, sliding into step 4, that is kind of my reason to keep coming back, which is on page 62, and it says that we see that our troubles are of our own making. And a lot of times I'll hear people talk about step 4, and particularly the fourth column, what was my part in it? And I have no idea if this is the case for anybody else. I really have to stay off thinking that I have a part, because that means you have a part. And then I'm going to start going, your part's way bigger than my part. I don't know how sincere I have to be about this, because you're a jerk anyway. So really, I stick with, my troubles are of my own making. And the causes and conditions, 100% of the time, are, I like to play God. I do not want to let God be God. I think I should be God. I think that I should be the arbiter of all that is good and right and wonderful in the world. And you should consult me for what clothes you should wear, how you should behave, who you should marry, what you should do in business, whatever. Because I have all those answers. I'm sure that I do. And believing that keeps me in a state of constant frustration and conflict, because you do not follow my rules. In the world, according to Amy, I am the supreme. You need to be falling in line with me. And for some reason, you're not falling in line. You are not what I think you should be, because I know that you have been sober for 15 years. This is what your life should look like. I have a resentment against you because your life doesn't look that way at all. I know that you are a mother. And people who are mothers should certainly behave a certain way. And you don't behave that way. So I've got a problem with you too. Or you like to mouth off almost as much as I do, but you're not as smart as I am. So I definitely have a resentment against you. But what comes at the bottom of all these resentments is self-centered fear. And how this plays out for me is, I have a resentment against my mother. She doesn't treat me the way that I think I should be treated. How this affects my self-esteem is, the voice of my ego says, I'm the greatest daughter that ever lived. I'm spiritually fit, I'm sober, I'm a great example of everything right in the world. But underneath of that is the fear that I'm not a very good daughter at all. Maybe I deserve to be treated the way that I've been treated. How that affects my ambition is, others should see that my mother adores me and we have the close, wonderful relationship that you read about in books. Rarely see in real life, but you read about it in books, so I should have that for myself. My fear again is, I'm not worthy of that. That not good enough, not good enough, not good enough is like a babbling brook underneath all of my resentments. And it's there because I'm playing God, and I know deep down that self-reliance always fails. And playing God is self-reliance. It means that on my own power, you all should be doing what I want. I should be feeling at ease and comfort all of the time. And surely there must be something very wrong if I am not at ease and comfort all of the time. How this affects my security is, I can't feel good about myself as a human being because my mother doesn't love me and have a close relationship with me. Again, I'm afraid I'm unworthy of that. But then I take a look at my false system of beliefs. Where did this stuff come from? What are the causes and conditions here? Well, I've read in a lot of books that blood is thicker than water. I've seen in a lot of movies that mothers and daughters have this very extra special close relationship. So I've been judging myself and my relationship with my mother on these things that I've seen and heard my whole life. I've been beating myself up with this crap my whole entire life, but I'm mad at her because I want to blame her. But the truth is, I'm afraid, again, it's because I'm not good enough. So what is my part in this? My trouble is of my own making. The part is that I'm playing God. I believe that my mom should adore me. She doesn't really have any great reason to adore me, but I think that she should. And how am I dishonest? I am in the delusion. And this is the big part of all this for me. My dishonesty is that I am in the delusion that if my mother loved me the way I dreamed that she could, I would love myself. Therefore, the whole shebang is her fault. If I don't love myself, if I'm failing, if things are falling apart, surely it's because my mother didn't love me enough. So those are some causes and conditions. Thanks.
Thanks, Amy. Hey, everybody, I'm an alcoholic. My name's David.
Hey, David.
I'm grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. I have a sobriety date. It's October 24th, 1989. If I stay sober for another couple of weeks, I'll be 30 years continuous sobriety. That is not my fault. I did everything to screw this thing up that you can possibly do. I have a sponsor. I have the privilege of working with other men in the 12 steps. This is my home group. I am, I haven't found a good way to phrase this, but I just like to take a moment to think about what an extraordinary place that we're all in right now. And that's a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I know a lot of your stories. I certainly know my story and some of the places we've been and the things that we've done and the things that we've seen and the people that we've hurt. And we all come together here and we have a safe place here. And recovery can happen here. And I don't ever want to take that for granted anymore. So, a couple things about the fourth step. I think that we do it a general disservice in Alcoholics Anonymous by making it some sort of boogeyman or some sort of ticket to the stadium. Or, I hear people, I didn't feel like I really was a member until. And really, this is a 12-step program, and any one particular step isn't worth much without the one that came before it and the one that comes after it. You know, they're related to one another, like steps. and for years I had step four linked up with step five. I thought of it in the same way. I procrastinated for a long time on step four because I could see down the road about step five. I could see a little further down the road that I was going to have to make amends to some people, and that's never going to happen. So I have a tendency to like peek ahead, but really, the way that he presents this in the book, step four is really tied to step three. Mm-hmm. Step three is really the evidence, or step four is really the evidence of step three, which is a very interesting way to look at that. Let's just look at what we read. It's, you know, it says we launched in a course of vigorous action. I mean, really vigorous? Come on. Can't we just chill on this? No, we've done our third step. And we're in a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning. 7 out of the 12 steps are house cleaning steps, by the way. So house cleaning is a pretty important little adventure. And this fourth step is really just the beginning of that. It says many of us never attempted. I know I never attempted it. And our decision was vital and crucial. What decision? The one we just made in the third step. This decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of something greater than ourselves is going to have little permanent effect. In other words, it's going to wear off. And that's happened to me. You know, sometimes this effect, this very great effect that comes from this surrender and this idea that something other than me is going to restore me to sanity, and I'm going to make this sincere decision to get on with the rest of the steps, and I'm going to some meetings, and I'm calling some people, and I'm starting to feel better, and I'm getting some energy from that, right? If I don't launch into this vigorous action, that's going to wear off. Oh, man, I did my third step, and I'm just not feeling great. It's like, yeah, how's that inventory coming? Mm. So, and you know, we all know what it means when you say you're working on your inventory. Okay, just me. So it's going to have a little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves that have been blocking us. I loved what Amy shared about my troubles are of my own making, and in the other chapter, in We Agnostics, we find out this fundamental idea of God is deep down in every man, woman, and child. It's sort of standard equipment. We all have this fundamental idea of God. And the book keeps telling me over and over again that that's enough to make a beginning. I don't need any more than this fundamental idea. The problem is I'm blocked from this relationship. I'm blocked by pomp, you know, ego, self-importance, worldly clamors, got to get the money, got to get the honey, got to keep all that stuff straight, you know what I mean? You know, yeah. Got to go. If I get all these things, then I'm going to be okay, you know? So I've got all this stuff blocking me from this fundamental idea of God. And this is the first time, and it's blocking me. And this is the first time he tells us our liquor was but a symptom. That's a terrible thing to contemplate. I come here thinking I've got a drinking problem, right? And logically, if you have a drinking problem, if you stop drinking, the problem will be solved. Makes sense, right? But if you're a guy like me and you put the plug in the jug and you're not drinking, it's like doing time, man. It's like an endurance test, you know? Like if I'm not drinking and I don't change, then I'm in trouble. The same guy who walks in these doors is going to walk back out those doors. What's the mechanism of change? And you guys keep telling me over and over and over and again for years, it's the 12 steps, David. We're going to take the 12 steps. That's the only program we have here. I'm like, yeah, I know, but. So this idea, now, and I don't mean to say that drinking is not a problem. If I put alcohol in this body, there's going to be a problem. The real problem, though, is that I'm walking around with something that's going to talk me into drinking. I can't live comfortably in the world without something. You got something to take the edge off? Because I'm uncomfortable. I don't like how I feel. I'm scared to death of people. I'm scared to death of the future. You got something for that? So we're going to get down to causes and conditions. And he's going to get very specific about it. We don't have to worry about, you know, how do we do that? He's going to tell us. Thanks.
Thanks. All right. Our next reading is also going to be on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with?
Resentment means to feel over and over again, to re-experience it. And the first time I did this, I'm kind of a word person, and I mean, obviously I'm also arrogant and have an ego disorder, but I explained to my sponsor that I didn't feel that way about people. I really wasn't angry. I knew that they were always doing the best that I could, that they could. And I really, there was a part of me that really believed that. I certainly wanted that to be true. I still want that to be true today, but I can honestly tell you I have never talked myself out of a resentment. I never have. And sometimes it's not a resentment like an anger thing. It's disappointment, it's frustration, it's some kind of conflict that it's the thing that in my head I keep rewriting the script, you know, oh, I should have said blah, blah, blah. Or, oh, I wish I could, because I'm kind of vengeful too. So I'm always thinking about it. I could have really knocked them back. And what I got told was put it on paper, put all of it on paper. And I had weird things. I mean, it wasn't just that there was a big long list of people that I was not happy with. There were other things, like I had to do the word friend. I've had an idea my whole life that a friend remembers your birthday, remembers all your special days, calls you back within 24 hours if you leave a message, is friends with your partner, all kinds of stuff. And I was pissed off at a lot of people because they were not friends like that. And I looked it up in the dictionary. I swear to God, I looked it up. It says acquaintance. Acquaintance. That is the lamest word. But that let all these people off the hook because acquaintances, how could I expect all that from them? I also had to do it with family. You know, again, I have that blood is thicker than water thing from watching, I don't know, too many mafia movies or something. And my family did not have each other's back. We're like a pack of wolves at each other's throats. But I looked that up, and it just said sharing a bloodline. That was it. None of the other stuff that was in my head that really bothers me, like we're supposed to be around a piano singing songs at Christmas. We're supposed to know each other's shoe size. We're supposed to know each other's favorite color, blah, blah, blah. So again, playing God. This is what family is. This is what friends are. And the directions are very clear. I put down in the first column, who am I angry with? In the second column, why am I angry with them? And then in the third column, I put down, what does this affect? Most people just do sex, self-esteem, security, pocketbook, and I kind of break that stuff down and take a look at all of it because I really want to see what it is. I'm looking for a pattern, and hopefully I'm doing a fist up with a sponsor who's got something on the ball who is also noticing patterns, noticing prevailing attitudes, like I rely on other people to make me feel good about myself. And of course they're always failing because I don't feel good about myself. They're not the ones that can fix that. I'm looking for places where I have constant expectation, which is again playing God. If you are a mother, then you are nice to all children. If you are a mother, when I am upset and I call you, you're going to be very gentle with me because I'm childlike in my vulnerability. And that almost never works because mothers are freaking tired and they don't want to hear somebody else complaining. So I've had a lot of resentments against women who are mothers. This is a way, putting it down in black and white is also a way to take it down from up here where it's this big black cloud that just follows me everywhere and pollutes the atmosphere. Because when I'm walking around with resentments, what I'm thinking to myself is, I'm using those absolute words like, everybody in AA is totally selfish and self-centered. Or everybody who's in the Navy is undereducated. Or that was the wrong thing to stay in here. I wish I could have thought of something better. But you know what I mean. That was the wrong thing to say. Okay, I'm done. I'm moving on. Anyway, as we've already talked about, God, I'm sorry I did that. Norfolk. But as we were talking about earlier, this blocks me off from the sunshine of the Spirit. If I'm playing God, then how can I let God be God? If I have a resentment, which basically is things didn't work out the way they were supposed to in the past, or have a fear, which is things probably aren't going to work out the way they're supposed to in the future, how on earth am I living one day at a time? How on earth am I living and let living? How on earth am I letting go and letting God? I'm not doing any of those things. I'm not even putting myself in a position where I can hear God. And I'm certainly not in a position where I have access to the power greater than my own, which is going to keep me separated from alcohol. Because walking around with this stuff in my head long enough and pretending to you, which I always do, that everything's great, I'm fine, I've got it. But on the inside, what it feels like to be me is a black mess. A black hole that just has it's dimensionless. It's just a big black hole. Walking around feeling like that, sooner or later, I'm gonna need a drink, or I'm gonna need a drug, or I'm gonna need a worthless man, or I'm gonna need a new pair of black shoes, whatever it is. I'm gonna go looking for a solution outside of myself. I cannot live this way. Resentment is the number one offender. And I have since, telling a sponsor that I really didn't have resentments. I have had multiple sponsees who were quite religious who said that they did not have resentments. And now I get the opportunity to say to them, the book says you do, so we got to look for them. Resentment means feeling something over and over. Think about the conversations you replay in your head. It's amazing how this all fits together. And it's amazing how in step three, it has just finished explaining to me what my relationship with God is going to be. Not Amy in the driver's seat and God as the co-pilot, but God as the director, Amy as the actor. God as the principal, Amy as the agent. God as the father, Amy as the child. I am a child. I haven't been able to meet my own needs. I need God. I am an actor. I need somebody to hand me a script because I screw up all the time, almost every time I open my mouth, obviously. And he is the principal. I am the agent. I need someone to give me marching orders because when I make up my own marching orders, they generally are mowing you down because you're in my way. That's it.
Thank you. Yeah, I love that that definition to sentiment to feel, re-feel. And in this case, we're not re-feeling joy, right? Mm. We're re-feeling anger. And a lot of these resentments for me are, some of them are quite obvious, you know? I mean, a lot of them have been with me all my life. I'm mad at my mother for for this or that, or currently I'm mad at her for being a photo op grandmother. She doesn't spend a lot of time with my children. I've got an idea about what that family should look like, what my children should experience with my mother, and mad at my dad for leaving the family. Some of that stuff's available to me. I've also got this sort of sleeper form of resentments too, where they don't keep me up at night and I don't think of them, you know, but then that dude walks in the door, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot I hate that guy. Yeah, got a few of those cooking, you know. But I love, you know, it's the number one offender. It's going to destroy more alcoholics than any, more of us than anything out. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. And this is my favorite thing from this particular paragraph. He says, not only have we been mentally and physically ill, we've also been spiritually sick. We just got the trifecta there, right? Up until this point, we've been talking about being bodily and mentally different, right? I've got that body that once I put, if I put alcohol in this body, I'm going to have another drink. A craving is going to develop that's never been satisfied. I never had a drink of alcohol that satisfied me. Every drink of alcohol I ever took was compelling to me to get another drink of alcohol, you see. And that seems to be a physical thing. And then I put the plug in the jug, I'm mentally different. If I'm not drinking, I'm thinking about drinking. And my mind's constantly presenting stuff to me, you know, about how it's going to be okay. We're not going to drive this time, David. We're not going to say anything stupid to anybody. We'll keep our hands closed. We'll stay home. We'll stay home and drink beer, and it'll be fine. Really, it'll be fine? Because it wasn't fine last time. Oh, this time it's going to be different for sure. We'll leave that crack alone and everything. And eventually I talk myself into it. And resentments also serve this function, too. You see, there's a part of me, a really twisted part of me, that kind of rejoices when you legitimately screw me over. If you do me wrong, I get to climb up on the cross. I get to talk to you about, oh man, you wouldn't believe what Amy, can you believe that shit she said about the Navy? I mean, what the, you know, I mean, stuff like that gives me some perverse kind of joy, but it also gives me a reason. Like, if I'm mad at you, I can kind of treat you however I feel like treating you. If I'm angry with you, I don't have to keep my promises to you. If I'm mad at my boss, I'll show up when I feel like it. There's a function going on there. So yeah, I got the body and mentally ill, but I've also been spiritually sick. And listen to this. I personally, this, you know, throw it out. It's my opinion. I think that this is the greatest promise in the book. It says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. I just have this little fantasy. It's like, you know, hey, Bob, would you read the promises? Sure. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Thanks for letting me read. That's like a 3-for-1 deal, you know? And isn't it interesting that I want to solve a spiritual, mental, physical problem on the mental physical? I want to read a book. I want to go to the gym. I want a new diet. I want a new psychiatrist, maybe some meds. I'm sure that'll be okay with my sponsor. You know, whatever, the gym membership, the diet, the exercise. I want to do mental, physical, maybe a new girlfriend, maybe a new town.
More books.
Books. I need self-help books. I love self-help books. I don't want to read them. I just enjoy the feeling I get purchasing them and imagining how straightened out I'm going to be after I read this book, you know? That's like one of the best feelings in the world. It's like hope, right? You know? But it just says when the spiritual malady is overcome, and he only gives us 12 steps to do that, he doesn't give us any other program, that the mental physical come along for the ride. And that absolutely tallies with my experience. And after this, man, it is just bulwark. It is not complicated. It's just written down. I listed the people that I'm mad at and why I'm angry. And in my experience, I'll just give you something that is fiercely practical that helped me get through this. I found that doing it left to right, I'm mad at my mom because, and that affects my, and then the fourth column that hopefully we'll get to tonight, that doing it left to right is really cumbersome. It's really easy to do it from column down. I'm mad at my mom because she's a photo op grandma. I'm mad at my dad because he left the family when I was young. I'm mad at my home group member because they took a position and they don't pay any attention to it. I'm mad at my son because he's lazy. I'm mad at my wife because she spends money like a crackhead, right? We can do this, right? We can do it. this is what's happening on bar stools all over America right now. You know what I mean? We're doing our inventory, you know, and if you're buying the drinks, I'll listen to yours, you know? So we'll just do that. Boom, 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 boom. And at some point I get to the end and I'm exhausted. I'm like, I think that's about everything I'm mad at. And then I can look at, well, my mom photo op grandma, that affects my ambition. I've got an ambition. I want her to behave in a certain way. And it's just my ambition. That's all it is. And it doesn't really help me to know that, but let's know it. It's my ambition, right? It kind of affects my self-esteem. Because, you know, I see my wife's mother is all over my kids and they have a great relationship with them. And now I don't feel so good about myself because my kids are tighter with her mom than they are with my mom, right? My dad leaving when I was young, that hits everything. That hits my pride, that hits my self-esteem, you know? Certainly my ambitions, right? My wife spending money, that's right in my pocketbook, right in my ambitions, right in my self-esteem. All that stuff. And so it starts to be kind of easy to see once I have the material down, top to bottom. It's much easier. It's much simpler that way. It's overwhelming to think about this all at once. But it really does break it down piece by piece so I can look at it in a coherent way. I think that's it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you both. The next reading is on page... Yeah, we're only the third reading on page 65 this time. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us, and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Oh, sorry, there's definitely more. That's my bad. The next part is on page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of the spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. Now, we're good.
I really thought when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous that I was working the steps so that I wouldn't drink anymore. It took me a long time to understand that I'm working the steps to clear away what blocks me from a power greater than my own. And on that power, I will be separated from alcohol and resentment and fear and all the other stuff. At first, it was compelling enough to be separated from alcohol because I was in a lot of trouble and I wanted to get out of trouble. But as time went on, I would start hearing people talk about having a sober bottom or having a nervous breakdown or having a nervous breakthrough or, you know, going into treatment X years sober. And I realized that it was because, at least for me, I needed to be taking a look at this work in the context of being separated from my selfishness and self-centeredness. That is the thing that certainly fuels all of my resentments and my fears. And it is also the thing that keeps me in the shadows. I have this idea that I should be able to do everything. I should be able to handle this and that. I should be strong enough for whatever. And when I'm pretending that, I'm being dishonest. Dishonesty blocking me from the sunshine of the spirit. When I'm looking at you with resentment and I'm thinking so-and-so should be this way or that way, What I'm doing is affirming deep down inside me somewhere that God does not know what the heck he's doing, because he has made a mistake. Clearly, he's made a mistake, because you should be this, that, or the other thing. And that is not a way to come to peace. And my understanding of this work is that I need to be able to get access to that power. I need to be able to get to ease and comfort just as easily as I'm sitting right here as if I got up and went to the refrigerator and pulled out a six-pack of beer. I need to be able to get to a place of ease and comfort. And that's where it's going to come from, a power greater than my own. It's going to come from letting go of these resentments. And I'm not going to let go of them. I'm not capable of making that happen. I already said, I've tried to talk myself out of tons of them. And I hate being a pissy little bitch. It really bothers me about myself that I have that tendency. And I really do have that tendency. I really do have a vengeful mind. I really do get peeved quite easily. I have to pray about my critical nature every single day. God has not relieved me of it. So even though I hate this about myself, it says in another section, I could not wish my resentments away any more than I could wish away the drink. I can't. I know it should be better. I know I should be different, but I can't make that happen. So there's nothing left for me to do except follow these directions. And the great part about how this book is written is that it so perfectly describes who I am. It so perfectly nails who I am in the illness of alcoholism. What I am with my physical allergy, what I am with obsessions of the mind, what I am with those bedevilments. You know, it says the delusion that we are like other people or presently may be. Not when I'm 10 years away from a drink am I going to automatically be okay and I will have gotten the power that I need to live my life. I'm always going to need access to that power. But because those first chapters describe so perfectly who I am as an alcoholic, I'm the kind of person that you need to give me a logical, well-thought-out argument or I am not going to listen to you. And this is the most beautiful. The Supreme Court couldn't put holes in this. Every single time I think, well, that didn't happen to me, the next line in the big book says, some of you may have not experienced this every single time. And because it does that so well on diagnosing my problem, I feel comfortable going all in on accepting the prescription, on accepting this is the solution. Here's what the problem is, 100% accurate. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to abandon myself to this. I'm going to go ahead and do this, even though the thing I hate most is looking bad to other people. I can't stand to look bad to other people. And the thought of going into a fifth step and telling somebody about the really shady and sketchy stuff I've done. I mean, like shady and sketchy stuff I've done probably in the past hour tonight. I've probably gotten myself into some trouble I don't know about yet today. So it's ongoing. It's not like I get all cleaned up and then I'm fixed and I can move on, you know, I can go on my way rejoicing. This is a blueprint for emotional and spiritual hygiene. And if I don't do this, if I don't do this on a regular basis, not when I feel like it, not when my butt is on fire, but on a regular basis, that stuff rises up in me. I have a threshold for uncomfortability and it's not really high. And when I get really uncomfortable and it doesn't feel good to be me on the inside, I go looking for something to make me feel better. And it is not found on my knees praying to God. It's usually found at, I don't know, Krispy Kreme, TJ Maxx, wherever. And I don't want to live that way. I don't want to keep answering the call from God by looking in my refrigerator wondering what I can eat. So that's all I got to say.
Yeah, I don't have a lot on this one, but now we've got three columns in the can. We got everything we're mad at, why we're mad at them. We're starting to see, you know, that my self-esteem is very precious to me. My pride is very precious to me. My pocketbook is apparently more precious to me than I thought. Apparently I have ambitions, you know. I'm starting to see some of this stuff, right? And I love the line, to conclude that others were wrong were as far as most of us ever got. Well, after you draw that conclusion, why do you need to look any further? I mean, it's obvious this guy is an idiot, right? So why do I need to look any further than that, right? And that's true with me. I know what's true about my mother. I know what's true about my father. I know what's true about my wife, my kids, you. I already know what's true. I've made the decision. They're wrong. So that seems to be my habit, right? That seems to be my default mode. I seem to be satisfied to conclude that you're wrong. But now I've got all this paper now with all these resentments, things I've been carrying around, some of them months, some of them decades, you know. But I'm starting to see something. There's a lot of material there. And he's offering me another way to look at it by saying, it's plain to see that a life that includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness, right? And I think about it. I waste a lot of time in this. I'm mad at somebody and I'm just busy. Maybe I'm cultivating some pithy response on Facebook to light this cat up, you know? You know what I mean? Because he's just such an idiot. And after he reads this, he's going to realize what a moron he is. You know, and my son's trying to get my attention. Daddy, not now. Daddy's plotting revenge. You know, I mean, it's that really happened. And that is clearly a waste of everyone's time. That is clearly a waste of an opportunity with my own child, right? And you stack a few of those things up, you've got a lot of wasted time and energy going into my life. And like Amy pointed out, one of my favorite things is, and it's popular in AA, you'll go to an AA meeting and leave it, and I just got to let that go, you know? And it sounds good. It's like cotton candy, though, man. The first bite of it is really tasty, but you can't live on it, you know? Like, I just got to let it go. That's like I call those things like a three traffic light share, you know, where it's like I get about three traffic lights down the road and I realize I have no idea how to do that. I don't know how to let stuff go, but I can do this. I can get it all down on paper and look at it. And then he gives us, once again, he's kind of selling us the reason to do that. While I'm plotting revenge and concluding you're wrong and not paying attention to the stuff I'm starting to think about, I'm back up in my own head, pulling my own gears, running my own show, and eventually the insanity of alcoholism returns, and eventually I drink again. And for me to drink is to die. I don't want to drink. So it's a good idea to do this stuff. I don't want to shut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Thanks.
All right. The next reading is on page 66. Should I just go ahead and do the rest?
Sure.
I feel like y'all are long-winded enough and it's 7:42. All right, I'm going to read the last two readings then. This is on page 66. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. Mm. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people like that. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. And the last reading on page 67 is referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done. We resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight.
Here's a saying that everybody builds castles in the air, but only alcoholics pack their luggage and move in. And that's really how I am with my resentments. Without this black and white exercise, I just live up in this thing that I've created where you all have wronged me and anybody would feel as bad as I do. Anybody would drink if I had the mother I had. But this forces me, and I can tell you everything that she did wrong, but this is going to force me to take a look at, well, what have I done? And it gets a little bit harder. But I look at it and I can see that in the resentment against my mother, where have I been selfish? My selfish attitude is that I can't say I've ever really thought about how she feels. I'm only interested in how I feel. Where have I been self-seeking? You know, do I shun her? Do I talk behind her back? I do all that stuff. I bet every one of my siblings is sick to death of hearing all the things that my mother did wrong to me. Where have I been dishonest? Well, I already said that. I was in the delusion that if my mother loved me more, I would be able to love myself, and therefore my whole entire life would have played out differently. Where have I been afraid? I am afraid of looking bad. I'm afraid of other people looking at me and thinking that I'm a bad daughter, I'm a bad woman, I'm just a bad egg in general. But I am also afraid of the opposite. I am afraid of looking good, and then I feel this pressure that I have to keep delivering, that I have to keep acting like I'm okay. And all of this is generated in the world according to Amy, where I'm making up the rules and I'm trying to use my own power to satisfy those rules. The key to the future then is take a look at myself. And what is amazing, what is miraculous, what is the magic of all of this is that when I take responsibility for myself, something starts changing inside of me. God starts changing me. And although I cannot tell you that I have a kindly view of my mother, I do have a tolerant view of my mother. And not tolerant like I'm gritting my teeth, but really this is where the she's doing the best she can comes in. I know that she's doing the best that she can. But without this work, it's kind of just like another thing that I say to look good to the rest of you. Oh, I know she's doing the best she can. But deep down on the inside, you know, I'm thinking about, I don't know, putting a firecracker up her butt. Or, I don't know, some pretending I'm the IRS and calling her up. Really icky stuff. I still have really icky stuff in my head. But the key to the future is being willing to take responsibility. I am not going to change my mother or anyone else, and I'm not even going to change myself. But when I put myself in this position, when I'm in this posture of humility, God can do something with me. There's that saying that if you don't want to get screwed, don't assume the position. And I think about that all the time because I know that that's really sexist and icky, but it really does fit. I think about that because I want to get into a position where God can have his way with me. Somebody has to have their way with me because I have not done a good job running the show, even though I do still kind of think I should be running the show. I need to be in this position so that that magic can happen. I haven't been able to perform the magic on myself, but I am willing to be different. I am willing to not go around the rest of my life being sorry. I want to be better. And the only vehicle I have for that is doing this work and getting to God, clearing away the things that are still blocking me.
Yeah, I love, we usually run out of time and we got to the magic piece of this thing. So I turn back to the list. I got my three columns, right? And it holds the key to the future. I'm prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. I love what Bob Darrell says. He says, how about this different angle? You have been you've been viewing these people as if you are the prosecuting attorney, right? All our life, talking about their crimes. How about you go play defense? You know, that's a different angle. So am I prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle? And he gives me, I also love this line, in that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to kill. I love that. Like they might have really screwed me over, or it might all be in my head. Either way, it doesn't matter. It's going to kill me. Yeah. So So they've got to be mastered, and he gives us a couple of things to do to start to work with, because now we got material. We've done the work. We've written it down on paper. We realize he's going to suggest that perhaps the people who wronged me are spiritually sick, right? Well, when I think about my mom, I know my mom. I know her story. I know how she was raised. I know how her father treated her. I've heard these stories all my life. It's easy for me to see that my mother is suffering. Easy. I know the same thing about my father. And whenever I have a resentment in Alcoholics Anonymous, I know your stories. It's easy for me to see that you're suffering too. You know, I know where you've been. You've already told me where you've been, right? So if I start to look at you not as somebody who did me wrong, but as another human being who is suffering, then I start to soften a little bit, just a little bit, but maybe it's enough. Because I got a new, there's a new crack in the door. There's a new light coming in on this situation, right? And I still don't like your symptoms. I don't like the way you're stepping on my toes. But that they, like ourselves, are sick too. And like ourselves, that's where the freedom is, man. Because you'll hear it in AA all the time. And it sounds like a spiritual pedestal, you know? Pray for the poor bastard. He's sick, you know? And doesn't that kind of assume a position of superiority? Pray for the poor lowly. No, it says, like ourselves. What if this, does this guy wake up in the morning just like me? Scared to death there's not going to be enough? Scared to death that the money's going to run out, or that there's not going to be an opportunity, or that my health is going to fail, or that my marriage is going to fail? Does this guy wake up this way just like me? Oh my God, I'm starting to get compassion for this poor bastard. I start to also realize the thing that I'm mad at this guy for, this very same thing I'm capable of doing to the next person. So, and guess what? I can't do anything about it. That's why it says I got to ask God. I got to pray now. And I know one of the stories says pray for their health, wealth, and happiness, and I'm sure there's nothing wrong with that. That's just not what this says. This says to pray for me. God, save me from being angry. Help me show, help me demonstrate patience, tolerance, pity, kindness, decency to this person. Help me do that for this person, because I can't do it. I don't have the power or the strength to treat this person in that way. God, help me, right? And if I do that work, then maybe I can take a look at this magical fourth column and see where I've been selfish, dishonest, frightened, inconsiderate. I was thinking about my poor mother the other day. I was thinking, you know, this woman is raising three kids by herself, and she comes downstairs at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm down there with all my friends, and she's like, I smelled smoke. And I'm like, yeah, because we're smoking. You know, that's how I treated my dear mother. You know, that poor lady's trying to run a household, trying to raise children. And I'm, you know, tearing the place up. I don't care. She had to take me to court. She filed a child in need of services petition because I wouldn't come home. I wouldn't stay put. I wouldn't go to school. I wouldn't do the things. This is me when I'm 14. So I put that woman through hell, you know? And when I really think about it, this photo op grandma thing is a crock of shit. She invites me all the time up to Richmond. I can't be bothered. I don't want to pack all my kids in the car and go up there and spend the day, but I'm invited, right? It's much easier for me to make it her fault, you know? And the same with my dad. So I am selfish, I'm dishonest. You know, I had a long rap sheet on my father, you know, and my sponsor was, you know, helped walk me through that. He's like, did you ever lie to your dad? Like, oh yeah, I lied to him all the time. Did you ever take anything from him that didn't belong to you? Oh yeah, yeah, stole from him. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well that's what we're talking about, David. We're not talking about column B, we're talking about what you did. And then when I start to look at that, I start to see. It says, I resolutely look for my own mistakes, not my part, where I was wrong, where I was to blame. And Bill always gives me credit for being a nice guy. He says, though a situation wasn't entirely my fault, we know you're such a good guy, David, and your motives are so good, we disregard the other person entirely. We saw our faults and listed them. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and we were willing to set these matters straight. How did the ninth step get in there? So we're out of time for tonight, but we've just begun. You know, I mean, we've really just begun to write this stuff down. But already in that, getting to that fourth column and getting to see the truth about the situation, you know, that my mother didn't make it easy for my father. My father was raised by drunks that left when he was a kid. I don't know if my father could have done anything other than what he did. And the truth about my father is he was always trying to find me. I'm the one giving him the Heisman. I'm the one, because I'm so hurt, I push back. I'm fine. Leave me alone. You know? And so now I'm starting to see the truth about this stuff. I haven't given it to another man yet. I haven't prayed about it yet. I haven't done my amends yet. There's more work to do. But already the temperature is coming down on these resentments, because I'm starting to look at them in terms of the truth. Instead of the truth being column B on the bar stool, they all screwed me over. That's the truth. I mean, at least I'm over in column D, and I'm starting to see where I kind of screwed them over. Just a little. Thanks.
All right. That is the end of our meeting. Thank you both so much. All right. We are going to pass the seventh tradition baskets. Boy, I don't see them right here. Okay, they're back there. All right. So somebody's going to handle that. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions.
Thank you.
While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Alcoholic David.
Hi, David.
This home group has an inventory coming up this Saturday morning. Everybody remember that?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, I do.
Is that everything?
I'm Kendra, I'm an alcoholic. There's a couple of flyers up here. One is, Tuesday, October 29th, get into service workshop and potluck supper with a panel of speakers. It looks like it's Westside Young and Sober in Norfolk. Good group.
Wasoid. Wasoid.
And then we do have a conference coming up. Where is it? I'm sure people would probably know where it is.
It's the Virginia Fall Assembly, and it's next weekend. It's in Virginia Beach at the Holiday Inn on Greenwich Road. You do not have to be a GSR in your group. It is open to everyone. Its registration is Friday at 5 p.m. I don't know what the numbers of those days are, but it's not this weekend. It's the next.
It's the fall weekend. Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else?
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, guys. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise their hands? Right, awesome. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Wow.
Hi, I'm Keith.
Hi,
I'm
Keith.
First 30 days.
Welcome.
Welcome, Keith.
Hi, Corey. Welcome.
My name's Richard. I'm in my first 30 days.
Hey. Richard.
Hi, Richard.
Welcome. Ross, I'm in my first 30 days.
Ross.
Hi, Ross. Welcome.
Is there anybody else?
All right.
Literature is available right there to my right, your left. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you would like to buy something. If you can fold it, it's free. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be right here at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, let's thank our lovely panel for tonight. Thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, which is on 22nd and Colonial, right past the BB&T on your right-hand side. Don't go over the tracks. You've gone too far. Do we have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Kendra?
I'm Kendra, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kendra.
Kendra.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. We have a nice way of closing.
Breakthrough.
Come on, break on through, baby.
Break on through.
Don't leave Chris out in the cold, man.
Oh, man.
Are you going out to
present?
We can do it. We can do it, dude.
I'm going.
I believe
you can do this, y'all.
This room.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever. Amen.